Call our second case of this morning and our last case, Laviato v. Certified Credit and Collection Bureau, number 16-3430, Messer Zelman and Cipro, you're going to have to pronounce it for me.
Cipro, thank you.
Ciprullo, got it. Yes, sir.
Good morning, may it please the court, and I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Fine.
Thank you. My name is Yitzchak Zelman, and I represent the appellant Laviato today. Your Honor, this is a rather straightforward claim under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, the FDCPA. In this action, Ms. Laviato received a collection letter from Certified Credit and Collection Bureau dated February 13, 2014.
So why is Judge Sheridan wrong? Judge Sheridan comes to the conclusion that there were two different letters, and the second letter was simply a follow-up suggesting that she pay her bill. Is that the right analysis?
Not quite, Your Honor, because if it was just a request for payment or a request for communication, that would probably be okay as long as it doesn't overshadow the validation rights provided in that February 13th letter. But this letter, which was sent 3 weeks later, dated March 5, 2014, this told Ms. Laviato she owes a debt to Monmouth Medical Center. You owe approximately $216.50, and it provided the date of service when she allegedly incurred this medical debt. And then the first paragraph says, you know, please pay your debt now. No problem with that. The next paragraph says, should there be any discrepancy, please contact us at this toll-free number. Or for our 24-hour automated customer service, call this toll-free number. Now, again, this is during the 30-day validation period. There's no mention in here, by the way, should there be any discrepancy, please call this number. If you want to dispute the debt, you've still got to do it in writing like that last validation notice 3 weeks ago said. And that's the real issue here, Your Honor. But we're not contesting that debt collectors cannot continue collection efforts during a 30-day validation period. They absolutely can. But if they're going to do that, they can't overshadow the validation notice.
Yeah, but to go along with your position, we would have to virtually say that the debt collector could not send anything out during that 30-day period. He couldn't even say a Christmas card out with his toll-free number on it. In effect, that's not what Capriolo stands for, and there's certainly nothing in the statute that says you can't communicate during the 30-day period.
Absolutely, and that's a distinction we're trying to draw, Your Honor. Again, and that's where I think all the courts have come down the line. Caprio from this court, Tehran from the Ninth Circuit, Miller from the Fourth Circuit, and it's this. A request for payment during the 30-day period, fine. We're okay with that. A request, please call us to talk about your account, no problem. Where the problem arises is when there is anything relating to a dispute or to challenge what you think is owed. So, for an example, in Caprio, the letter said, if we can answer any questions or if you feel you do not owe this amount, please call us toll-free at this number.
Caprio was off the chart, of course.
Your Honor, I don't want to cut you off.
I didn't mean to cut you off. It seems that what you're arguing, though, is that any letter would be inappropriate during that 30-day period because anything they send is going to have an invitation of one kind or another to communicate, to settle, or to dispute the debt.
Not at all, Your Honor. Because look at Tehran versus Kaplan, the Ninth Circuit decision from 1987. In that case, it just says, unless an immediate telephone call is made to Jay Scott, a collection assistant at our office, we may find it necessary to recommend to our client that they proceed with legal action. There's nothing about disputing a debt. It's a request for communication. And a request for communication, that's fine. And the Ninth Circuit said, that's not overshadowing. But, Your Honor, you said Caprio's off the charts. Well, let's talk about that for a second. In Caprio, you had that first language on the front which says, if we can answer any questions or if you feel you do not owe us an amount, please call us at this number. On the back of the letter was a 30-day validation letter. So Ray Caprio, in that case, could have turned the letter over, assumed the validation notice, and be like, oh, if I want to dispute it, it's got to be in writing. Ms. Laviato didn't have that luxury here, because if she would have turned the letter over, there was nothing there. There's no validation notice on the letter, on the front or on the back. It was in another letter 3 weeks earlier. To think that she's going to remember that, that's giving the least sophisticated consumer way too much credit, Your Honor.
So should the second letter have reminded her of her rights?
I'm not saying that the second letter always has to remind her of her rights, but if it's going to refer to disputing rights or anything exercising disputes, then it has to, because otherwise you'd run afoul of overshadowing. And now, look, a validation notice is overshadowed or contradicted if it would make the least sophisticated consumer uncertain as to their rights. That's what this court said in Wilson versus Quadramed back in 2000. And Congress thought you know, that's such a good idea. We're going to put that right in the statute. In 2006, they amended the FDCPA to say exactly that. And they amended 1692GB to say you can continue collection efforts during the 30-day period. But if you do so, it may not overshadow or be inconsistent with the disclosure of the consumer's right to dispute their debt. So, again, Miller v. Paco, cited by this court in Caprio, which was from the Fourth Circuit back in 1991. In that case, it said, if there is a valid reason to phone us at this phone number today, that is in the nature of disputing a debt. It's not a request for communication like Tehran. It's saying, if you want us to, if you think there's a valid reason why you're not paying this debt, let us know. So that's in the nature of a dispute. And in fact, we have a good example closer to home. Judge Sheridan, in a more recent case, Ashkenazi versus Certified Credit and Collection Bureau, the same collection agency, in that case, the letter said, the above account has been placed with us for collection. If you believe these services should have been covered by your insurance company, please call your insurance company at this phone number, and please owe us to call us so that we can mark your account accordingly. Again, that's in the nature of dispute, because you don't think you owe the debt because you think your insurance company should have covered it. And in that case, Judge Sheridan said, I agree. I think that a least sophisticated consumer may be misled into disputing their debt orally versus in writing. And so that's where I think the major distinction is, Your Honor. We're not saying that every communication during the 30-day period is going to violate 1692G. As long as it doesn't fall in the nature of a dispute or a challenge to the amounts owed or something of that nature, they can absolutely request payment. If Certified in this case would have just kept the first paragraph, which is, the above account has been placed with us for collection. Settlement is expected to be made with this office. Kindly remit payment in full. No problem. We wouldn't have brought that case. But it's the next paragraph which triggers this, which is, should there be any discrepancy, please call us at this number. What does that mean, should there be any discrepancy? Discrepancies means if you don't think you owe this amount, or maybe you don't recognize this creditor. Those are natures of the dispute. And again, it just says, please call us. There's no reminder to her, hey, if you call us, you're not going to trigger the validation rights. And that's a big deal, Your Honor, because 1692G is the most powerful rights afforded to a consumer under the FDCPA. I'm not aware of any other provision under the FDCPA which allows a debtor to actually stop communication efforts. But 1692GB gives them that exact right, because if they effectively exercise their rights to dispute a debt under the 30-day validation period, debt collection activities have to stop until the debt collection agency can provide verification of the debt. There's no other provision in the FDCPA which actually says, you know, you can stop communication efforts or collection efforts.
Well, in this case, even the most unsophisticated debtor would have some recollection that a few weeks previous they received a communication, but chose that if they dispute the debt how to do it. Wouldn't they recollect they had that prior right? And how would this overshadow if they received this other letter just a few weeks earlier?
Well, again, Your Honor, in Caprio, that validation notice was on the back of the letter. This was 1-3 weeks
earlier. This is two letters here. The Caprio was one letter.
Right.
And it seems to be if I was unsophisticated, I still remember I received a letter. It was 2 weeks earlier, 3 weeks earlier, saying that if I dispute this thing, I send them this communication, and they have to show me where the debt came from.
Sure, and Ms. Laniero may or may not remember that she did receive a letter 3 weeks earlier, but we're talking about the nuances of how to dispute the debt. You know, that, to expect that the least sophisticated consumer remember, yes, I got this letter 3 weeks ago, it said something in there about disputing a debt, and it specifically said to do it in writing. And that's the only way that I'm going to be effectively invoking the rights under 1690G. That I don't believe the least sophisticated consumer is going to be able to do. Now, if they put like an explanatory sentence in here, this doesn't affect your rights under the validation notice you received 3 weeks ago. Refer to that for how to properly dispute the debt. This is not meant to supplement any of your, you know, dispute methods under the statute. Something like that, you know, would probably make this letter okay, but it doesn't. It simply says, should there be any discrepancy, please call this number. And so that tells the least sophisticated consumer, that tells me. It tells, that's just a logical reading of this letter if you want to dispute that, call us and we'll take that dispute.
Yeah, but I'm troubled, but 3 weeks earlier they received a letter that told them that. And even if you're not sophisticated, you know you got a prior letter that says if you dispute the debt, well, no problem, we'll stop the clock and then tell you where the debt came from. Arguing that since Caprio was an aggravated situation, one letter, you didn't have two letters, you had one letter. In this case, we have to assess whether someone's unsophisticated would forget, well, I had a letter just a few weeks ago. If I don't like this debt, I think I'm not involved in it. What do I do?
Right, and there's two things with that. First of all, we think this letter is actually far worse than Caprio because, again, you can't just turn over the letter and read the validation notes and that will clear up any confusion you have. You have to read the last letter you got 3 weeks earlier if you can still have it. Now, but again, just remember the underlying theme here is, and I just know my time is up, but this will take 20 seconds, okay. Is just that this is a 12B6 motion, and this case has already been to this court once already in the past 2 years, and this is the second time here. But at the end of the day, this is still a pre-answer motion to dismiss under Rule 12B6. And the question is, is there no possible way that no least sophisticated consumer would be misled by this? And as Your Honor said in Caprio, it's not our job to decide whether or not this is the only way to read it. If it, under 12 weeks, if a least sophisticated consumer can be misled by this, we should let the case go forward. And that's what we believe should have been happening in this case, Your Honor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll hear from Mr. Ciparulla.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Peter Ciparulla, and I represent the Appellee Certified Credit and Collection Bureau.
Isn't a three-week time lapse and two separate letters demonstrated that a consumer here would be even more likely to be misled than in Caprio?
No, Your Honor. There is no requirement. It's a Third Circuit decision, Peterson versus Portfolio Recovery Associates.
But this is the one thing you can't do is you've got to tell them if they wish to dispute it, they must do it in writing. And you come here with all caps, should there be any discrepancy, please call toll-free 800-blank-blank or our 24-hour automated customer service at 800, etc. I mean, that's blatant. And the problem you have is Caprio. You even have more of a problem that you've got the author of Caprio sitting right next to me.
Well, I think that's favorable to my client's calls, Your Honor.
And Caprio, the least sophisticated debtor, could have just looked at the reverse side of the letter. I mean, as Mr. Zellman said, they may not, who knows if 3 weeks later you even have the letter. And then you get another letter that says, all caps, if you've got a problem, call us. That sounds like that is a violation of the Act, pure and simple.
Yeah, under the Peterson versus Portfolio.
And by the way, remember, it isn't just it's the least sophisticated. Yes. I mean, you got to make it so you know. I got to tell you, I used to do some of this work. So I used to be fairly sophisticated. If I got this letter, I would think it's telling me I'm supposed to call if I got a problem.
Yeah, I would point out that first Your Honor made the point that this is in all caps. The whole letter is in all caps, so there's no particular emphasis.
But it's a paragraph all by itself.
Absolutely. The whole letter is in capitals, though, and it's a continuation of an invitation pertaining to settlement, and the settlement is expected to be with this.
Why not just send the first letters twice? Why not just send the first letter and caption it second notice that includes...
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Why not just send the first letter again, caption it second notice? We wouldn't have a problem, would we?
Well, there's no requirement.
No, but if you did that, there would be no problem, right?
I don't see where there would be a problem.
No, you don't see a problem here at all. But if you sent the first letter twice with the appropriate language and just captioned it second collection notice, you could avoid the issue we're confronted with,
right? That is absolutely true.
So there was a decision to exclude that language from the second letter, right?
But there's no requirement.
There was a decision. There was a decision made to exclude that language from the second letter, right?
So, I'm not sure the genesis of how this second letter came to be. All I can say is that the second letter states what it states, what conscious decision making was.
But conspicuously absent is any reference to the written piece.
But there's no requirement, respectfully, Your Honor. There's no requirement under the law for the second communication to refer back to the original. Validation.
But there's a requirement under the law that you have to write this with the common denominator of the least sophisticated consumer, right?
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
But, yeah, but doesn't your letter say if you dispute the debt, call us? In other words, telling me if I dispute this debt, for whatever reason, call me. Doesn't that
No, I respectfully don't interpret it that way. It says to read it fully into the record, if that's okay.
Should there be any discrepancy, please call toll-free 800-253-2920 or for our 24-hour automated customer service call, 800-354-4744.
Yes.
So is that in effect saying if you dispute this debt, call me up?
Well, I think you have to read it with the continuation of the above, because the preceding sentence is, the above account has been placed with us for collecting. Settlements expected to be made with this office, kindly remit payment in full. Should there be any discrepancy, please call us toll-free, then the phone number.
There's nothing in there, zero, nada, about disputing it in writing, which is what the Act requires.
But the
thing, by the way, that just amazes me here is how you can dismiss this on a 12B6 motion.
Your Honor, the validation rights were originally provided. There's no requirement there's no requirement that a second letter follow, repeat those validation rights. Under the Weber decision, the Eastern District decision, the least sophisticated consumer is presumed to keep the first letter. There's no case law that I saw cited in...
In this circuit, is that the rule that the least sophisticated debtor is presumed to keep the letter and remember what it says, and to know what it says, even if you don't have the letter?
There is no... The Weber decision states that. I have not seen a case in the Third Circuit commenting either way on that, other than the Pearson decision, which states that there is no need to repeat those validation rights. So if there's no... If the Peterson decision says there's no need to repeat those validation rights and subsequent communications, I think it's logically inferred that that the least sophisticated consumer would keep...
Let's unpack this a bit. If the second letter was the only letter sent, would you have violated the Act?
If the second letter was... Yes, because the validation rights were not provided.
Okay. The second letter was sent, and doesn't even refer back to the first letter, does it?
No, it doesn't. But respectfully, Your Honor, there's no requirement for it to do so.
There is a requirement that you tell somebody if they want to dispute the amount claimed to be owed, that you do so in writing. That is what the statute requires.
Yes.
And the second letter violates the statute. And you're saying the second letter is okay because it's cleansed by a letter 3 weeks before that may have been lost.
That's not what I'm saying. The second letter is a continuation of
if the second letter is a continuation of the first, it has to say it's a continuation of the first. And everything in this letter is subject to everything we said in the first letter, and the first letter supersedes the second letter.
Courts have found that continued discussions pertaining to settlement or to calling to discuss the status of the claim are not violation of FDCPA. In the District of New Jersey, Judge Shipp and Rosa versus Encore found that when in the letter where it stated second, where the original letter stated that if, excuse me one second, where the original letter stated that you believe this account has been paid, please call us, that was not violating the FDCPA. That was not violating the FDCPA. Even though it referenced, if you believe you paid the debt, clause in the initial correspondence, there was no confusion with Caprio. There was no violation of the Caprio decision.
What types of communications do you think actually overshadow a proper validation notice?
Look at the Miller case. Screaming headlines. Pay immediately. If you don't pay in 10 days, we're going to report you to reporting. That's a case. Would be a clear violation. Threatening to take, saying if you don't pay in within 10 days, we're going to take legal action. That would be, the consumer would think I have to pay within 10 days, otherwise...
Well, it says kindly remit payment in full here. So it's, settlement is expected with this office, kindly remit payment in full. If you have any questions, call us at this number.
Yes. I mean, because that's not telling us we're going to file a lawsuit against you, we're going to hurt your credit rating. It's saying that we expect you to make payment, and payment is expected with us, And by putting the discrepancy statement is, it's inviting continued discussion about settling the debt and paying the debt.
So would it have been okay to send a third and a fourth and a fifth letter identical to the second letter with no problem?
Well, I think if it was sent after the 30-day period.
No, within 30 days. It's just like this, but instead of you have two letters here, let's assume you had three and four letters. Would that be okay?
Well, that would be the... that would be the Palmer case. I think there were four letters. There were four letters sent. But then you might be raising different issues. Someone might construe that as harassing if you're sending four letters in a very short period of time. But if assuming that you don't have the harassment argument and you're just sending the same letter, I wouldn't see that to be a problem. I mean, there's also case law that indicates we want to encourage settlement. That's the Lewis decision. We don't want to have to force debt collectors to retain attorneys, or creditors, excuse me, to retain attorneys to file suits. We want to encourage conversation, and there's significant case law on that subject, which has been cited in the briefing. And I would also refer, Your Honor, again, this is the Eastern District of New Jersey, Eastern District of New York decision, the Spire decision, saying that you must pay or call this office. So that's suggesting you must pay or call this office. That's also suggesting that if you have an issue with the debt to make a phone call, and that was found not to overshadow the validation right.
You know what strikes me about your second letter? That the mailing address appears once. But you've got three phone call numbers in that second letter. To me, that shows you're interested in talking to the person. You're not interested in mailing anything. You gave the mailing address. That's you have to have that on any communication. But what you had was you had three separate numbers. So you were indicating this is the way you want to have a rapport with them or whatever. If that doesn't show you're interested in discussing the debt and telling him what the debt is and where it's from and so forth, why did you only have the mailing address once, but three times you had three different numbers?
Well, it's because they're debt collection agencies. They're interested in settling the debt and getting the debt paid.
But they can't dispute it with in that 30 days by talking to them if the debtor has a dispute.
Well, I suggest to Your Honor, this letter in the history of the Tehran case, which suggests that continued settlement efforts, continued collection efforts during the 30-day period. That is what this letter is trying to do.
It's trying to get the consumer to call. Doesn't it speak? You really want to talk to them more than them to mail you anything when you have a mailing address once and you have three different phone calls for them to communicate with you?
Yes, but you have the validation rights properly set forth in the first letter.
Let's assume without it acknowledging that the least sophisticated debtor wouldn't have remembered the prior letter. If that is a bona fide thing to assume, can't you say, wouldn't it be automatic, that if I want to dispute this debt, I've got to call these people. I can't mail them. They got three numbers. They're looking to talk to me, not to have me mail them anything.
That is... Does Your Honor's hypothetical presuppose that the consumer fits the first letter?
Yeah, you didn't put three mailing addresses. You put three phone numbers and one mailing address.
Right. But I would suggest, contrary to Caprio, the actual mailing address is in big type, as opposed to bigger type than actually the phone numbers, where in Caprio the mailing address was in small, very small type, and the phone numbers were in bold. And there's no particular emphasis on the phone numbers as different from the rest of the type of the letter, other
Caprio, the basis wasn't that we're looking to talk to you. We're not looking to have any mail, or we're looking to have a little rapport here. We want to discuss it with you. And doesn't the fact that maybe I'm chasing something ridiculous here, but I thought it was strange that three phone numbers in the letter and only one mailing address.
Yeah, right.
And really, if they wanted to dispute it, all they have to do is send you a letter. Should have gotten three mailing addresses and one phone number.
But this letter is done within the context of continued collection activity within the 30-day period, continued promoting settlement, trying to get a settlement, trying to get payment. It's the Tehran case. It's the Spira case. It's just seeking to get payment. And, again, there's no dispute that the validation rights were provided. There's no case law that I've found.
Now, your adversary acknowledged that. His position is within that 30-day period, you overwhelm them by this desire to talk turkey with them, not to bail them anything.
I just suggested this eight-word second sentence does not overshadow the validation rights. This is really parsing of letters. If you sent
the first letter, the second letter went first, and right after that you sent a letter that says, no, it really has to be in writing, maybe you got a case. But when you send the first letter and then roughly 3 weeks later you send a second letter that on its face violates the statute, then you really have a problem. And it's one, maybe you could have an argument at summary judgment that, in fact, the person had the first letter in front of them, that the first they remembered that the first letter said it could be in writing, and had maybe they had consulted an attorney at some point, and the person said, don't worry about it. Who knows? But at 12b-6, it seems like you've got to go with the person who's the least, the bottom of the pile in terms of sophistication. And this says, got a problem? Call me.
My time is up. I do want to briefly respond, if I may.
Sure.
First letter has to have, within 5 days, you have to send those validation rights. So to send that second letter without sending the initial validation rights with it would be a whole other problem. Again, I have not been able to find a case, and nor are there any cases cited in the papers, which state that the second notice must refer back to the first letter. There's no cases on that. There is case law that says
the second notice needs to say that if you've got a problem, it has to be dealt with in writing.
No. There is case law that says that the least sophisticated consumer, New York has the same interpretation of least sophisticated consumer as New Jersey, that says that they are presumed to have kept, even the least sophisticated consumer is presumed to keep their letter. Thank you, Your Honor. It's been an honor to have an opportunity to speak before this court. Thank you.
Do you have anything to add, Mr. Zellman?
Just briefly, Your Honor. Thank you. I'm not looking for broad sweeping rules from this court that every time someone gets a letter, they have to refer back to it, they have to keep all of that. That's not what we're asking about. We're just saying that in this situation, in this specific letter, there's just no mention of it. Your Honor twice mentioned that should you got a problem, call us. But that's not even what it says. It says, should there be any discrepancy, which literally is telling them to their face, if you don't think you owe this money, if you think maybe you owe less.
I don't think the same.
Right, but I just want to point, Your Honor, to page 21 of my brief, where I cite three cases out of the District of Pennsylvania, Eastern District of Pennsylvania, Middle District, and Eastern, Lukowski.
We're quite familiar with the brief. Briefs.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Covered very well.
But essentially all it says there is, and I'm quoting, a consumer is not expected to recall the contents of earlier communications from the debt collector because they receive a lot of communications from a debt collector. So I think by saying you're supposed to keep them, you're supposed to remember it, you're setting the bar way too high for the least sophisticated consumer who really is, you know, the lower rungs of sophistication in our society. And what my adversary was saying that, oh, you know, we want to encourage settlement and therefore, you know, don't knock us down for making a settlement offer. That's okay. And debt collectors make that argument all the time. But the point is, just because settlement is encouraged and we want to encourage settlement, it doesn't cleanse, you know, deceptive practices under the FDCPA. And this one, in our opinion, is a big one. Seth, unless Your Honor has any other questions for me.
No,
thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, and thank you to both counsel for being with us today. And we'll take the matter to advisement. And recess.
This court is adjourned until Friday, May 19th. Thank you.
Thank you.